Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Friday, December 16th, 2016. It's a special Friday edition. I'm Lee Robartis. On today's show, we'll have excerpts from Idaho Representative Paulette Jordan's talk at the Moscow League of Women Voters legislative preview session held December 7th. But first, this news. The three Republican District 9 Washington legislators say they are opposed to a state parks department proposal to spend $6.2 million over the next 2 years to upgrade the 250-mile-long John Wayne Trail, the longest rail-to-trail conversion in the United States. The money would mostly be spent on the undeveloped 130-mile section of the trail east of the Columbia River, which ends at Malden in northern Whitman County. The money would be used to create trailheads at Tico and Rosalia, improve the section between Lind and Rosalia, and make repairs to the Tico Trestle. The two state representatives from the district, Joe Schmick of Colfax and Mary Dye of Pomeroy, quietly inserted language into a must-pass budget bill last year that would have closed the trail east of the Columbia River and granted ownership to adjacent landowners. But a drafting error said the state would close the trail from the Columbia River to the Columbia River, therefore nullifying the attempt. The secretive amendment caused outrage in some sectors and prompted the Parks Department to hold public meetings on the future of the trail at various towns nearby, including in northern Whitman County. Schmick had said at the time adjacent landowners had requested the trail be closed because it promotes littering, vandalism, trespassing, and illegal camping on adjacent land. Representative Dye told the Daily News the Parks Department should look at the number of people served per dollar spent. Schmick recently told the Whitman County Gazette the $6.2 million should be spent on other projects. Senate Majority Leader Mark Schessler of Ritzville told the Daily News the Parks Department has a backlog of projects that would better serve Washington State residents. Schessler said, "Where do you get the best value? We put less than $1 million into Lions Ferry State Park to reopen. We will get more people in one summer weekend than you will in a year on that segment of the trail." The Washington Public Utilities Commission has rejected Avista Utilities' request for a boost in electricity and natural gas rates for Washington customers. The rates would have been the equivalent of $9 more per month for the average household. The vote yesterday was 2-1. The two commissioners who voted against the raise in electricity and natural gas rates said Avista had not proven the need for more money. The Washington State University Interfraternity Council and Panhellenic organizations have released a 16-page action plan to deal with health and safety issues among the Greek community. A committee with representatives from all WSU Greek houses, the Associated Students of Washington State University, WSU Health and Wellness, and the WSU Center for Fraternity and Sorority Life was convened after the Greek councils imposed a moratorium on social events in early November. The moratorium was put into effect because of an increase in rapes, assaults, falls, and hospitalizations caused by Greek House members overusing alcohol or drugs. According to the Daily News, the plan says fraternities or sororities who hold parties must have at least one executive chapter member and four risk monitors if there are less than 100 people at the party. If the party has more than 250 people at it, there would be a risk team of six, and for parties with more than 500 people, there would be two executive members and eight risk monitors. Some of the risk monitors would be assigned to monitor fire escapes, balconies, and stairs. Another would be at the door with an executive member, and another would roam. Each chapter will be required to purchase a card reader to check identification at the door of events. The document that was produced this week said each council, each Greek House chapter, and each WSU health and wellness representative would complete a series of tasks. The tasks include holding sexual assault and mental health awareness weeks each year, holding risk management training for board members, and creating policies to deal with various issues. A spokesperson for Idaho Governor C.L. Butch Otter says the Donald Trump transition team is vetting Otter for a possible job as agriculture secretary. The 74-year-old Otter is the former president of Simplot International, who supported Trump late in his campaign, although he had originally endorsed Ohio Governor John Kasich for president. Otter told the Twin Falls Times News the Trump transition team had asked him to list the top three positions he would be interested in, and he replied Interior Secretary, Agriculture Secretary, and International Trade Commission. Otter told the paper, "We're at door number two right now." Otter has 2 years left in his third term as governor and has said he does not plan to run for a fourth term. He was lieutenant governor for 14 years and then ran for Congress in 2000. He served 3 terms in Congress. The agriculture secretary is responsible for the U.S. Forest Service, among other things. Otter spokesperson John Hannion told the Associated Press he does not have any information about other candidates for the ag secretary job or a time frame when the decision would be made. The Donald Trump transition team has officially announced U.S. Representative Ryan Zinke of Montana will be his Interior Secretary. Trump, who in the last week reportedly considered U.S. Representative Kathy McMorris Rogers of Washington for the post, said of Zinke, he has built one of the strongest track records on championing regulatory relief, forest management, responsible energy development, and public land issues. At the same time, my administration's goal is to repeal bad regulations and use our natural resources to create jobs and wealth for the American people. And Ryan will explore every possibility for how we can safely and responsibly do that. The Interior Department controls 20% of federal lands, including Bureau of Land Management acreage and national parks. The Reuters news agency reported because Zinke is in favor of keeping public lands under federal ownership, the nomination may disappoint those on the right who believed the election of Trump and a Republican-dominated Congress might be their chance to have federal land such as national forest land under the Department of Agriculture and national park and BLM land under the Interior Department transferred to state ownership. Critics say that would lead to the eventual selling off of federal land in the West. Trump told Field & Stream magazine in January, "I don't like the idea because I want to keep the lands great, and you don't know what the state is going to do." Republican leaders had hoped Zinke, a former Navy SEAL commander, would challenge Democratic U.S. Senator John Tester of Montana in 2018, but that would not be likely if he is confirmed as Interior Secretary. The unions representing 15,000 University of Washington staff have asked the university administration to declare a sanctuary campus. According to the 6 unions, a sanctuary campus means the school will refuse federal immigration and customs enforcement agents access to campus, prohibit campus police from asking about recording or reporting immigration status or collaborating with ICE, and prohibit housing discrimination based on immigration status or religion. The University of Washington would also not voluntarily share information about undocumented or Muslim students or workers with federal officials, will provide resources for immigrant students and staff who face urgent legal, housing, health, or education needs because of changing federal policies targeting immigrants, and continue to allow deferred action for childhood arrival students, also known as DACA students, who to pay in-state tuition. The letter makes the request for the University of Washington's main Seattle campus, plus its branch campuses in Tacoma and Bothell. The six unions who sent the request are the SEIU Local 925, the SEIU 1199 Northwest, the Washington Federation of State Employees Local 1488, the Washington State Nurses Association, the UAW Local 4121, and the Inland Boatmen's Union. University of Washington spokesperson Norm Arkans told the Seattle Times, "The university addressed many of the issues through a November 17th letter from University President Anna Marie Casse and Provost Jerry Baldesty, and that the sanctuary label won't help students much more than what the university is already doing." Moscow's Urban Renewal Agency discussed their hopes for the 6th and Jackson Street realignment project yesterday morning. Urban Renewal Agency Executive Director Bill Belknap said the project will begin the bidding process in late January, with construction expected to begin after the University of Idaho ends its spring semester. The project would shift the south side of 6th Street west of Jackson Street further south and add 5 more feet to the existing 5-foot sidewalk on the north side of the street. Belknap said that could also include new street trees and decorative street lights. The project is to better align the eastbound lane on both sides of the intersection. Belknap said the agency would dedicate 3,023 square feet of the southwestern corner of South Jackson and West 6th Street for a right turn lane in exchange for the city installing frontage improvements along the turn lane. The agency would pay for frontage improvements on the south side of 6th Street along Jackson Street. Belknap said since the city failed to get a federal highway safety grant, the city will have to pay for the improvements itself. A 23-year-old Moscow man who is facing 11 felony counts of exploitation of a child did not show up for his court date at the Latah County Courthouse this week. Senior Deputy Prosecutor Maya Vowles said this would typically trigger a request for a bench warrant for Yusef Al-Khalaf's arrest, but she isn't sure Al-Khalaf was notified of the hearing. According to court documents, Al-Khalaf allegedly accessed or possessed child pornography. He is a University of Idaho student from Kuwait. In an affidavit, police said they received a cyber tip line notification from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children on August 29th, indicating someone possessed child pornography while accessing cloud storage service Dropboxes. The report said a specific account uploaded as much as 239 files that could potentially contain child pornography. Police served Al-Khalaf with a search warrant, and a phone and laptop were seized from his apartment. Moscow police officer Eric Kornas said in an affidavit after examining the contents of the cell phone and laptop, he's confident they belong to Al-Khalaf, and he knowingly possessed child pornography containing identified child victims. Latah County Magistrate John Judge said he will issue a bench warrant for Al-Khalaf's arrest if he does not appear for his status conference Monday. We now turn to our featured segment. On Wednesday, December 7th, District 5 House members Republican Carolyn Troy of Genesee and Democrat Paulette Jordan of Plummer gave a legislative preview to the Moscow League of Women Voters. Both representatives are about to serve their second two-year term in the House. Newly elected Republican Senator Dan Foreman of Moscow did not attend the December 7th session. On last Friday's evening report, we brought you the comments from Idaho Representative Carolyn Troy. Today we have the comments from Representative Paulette Jordan.
This is my first opportunity to really sit before you all since the election night, which was insane. But I really do truly want to speak out from my heart and say thank you to each and every one of you who have volunteered, have stopped by the headquarters. My manager, Heather Colwell, is here. She'll stay on board, in fact, this session, so she'll be extremely helpful. If you want to reach out to her for continued contact and projects, we'll be on. But with that, it's extremely humbling to sit before you again. And I do hope we'll still have other people like Senator Schmidt still on board and helping us within this district, because he did a lot of work. We'll just say that much, because I'm seeing now that he's not here with us, how much work he did, and I've been asked to step up and take on some of those roles for him because he does leave a huge gap. And so now being, as they say, the only Democrat in the North from Boise up, I've been tasked with a lot more than I think. I just feel I have very little time in the day, so much so that my mom said, no, you're not going because you look exhausted. I've been traveling and working with everyone, both statewide and nationally, just simply to get as much done as possible for our state, which a lot of the movement comes by working with our president directly, working with our congressional members that are still in office. And that's how I can see us really moving things before January 20th, which right now we really don't know what that looks like. We still have the Electoral College voters coming up here on the 19th. So that will really determine our outlook for the next 4 years. So I'm kind of sitting here with my fingers crossed wondering how they're going to turn out. That being said, we have what it looks like now, a Republican-controlled White House, a Republican-controlled Congress and Senate, and soon a Supreme Court system. So we have a lot of work to do, a lot of work ahead of us. For me, I've been able to gather with my caucus. We've been able to strategize for the time being. We're going to meet some more. I'll be going back to Boise again. I've been there a few times, mostly because I still sit on the Legislative Council for the state. I am now appointed to remain my position with State Affairs. I am also appointed to Energy, Environment, and Technology, which is a continuation from the last term. And then I have now been appointed to the Natural Resources Committee. And that will be an extremely insightful committee, because what we're going to see there are more bills, which is the continuation of last session, to take over public lands. And so what I'm hearing from that is some of the projective outlooks will be the state will look into privatizing public land. It's unfortunate because they know where I stand in that issue. So what they've done is appoint more Republicans to that committee. So we'll have some pretty feisty debates. But I'm hoping those will manage itself out behind the scenes. I still hold a great deal of respect for people. I think that's really what it comes down to, is us really truly being leaders and standing together, being above the rhetoric, and not allowing those people who are outside in their fringe groups trying to control the outlook of the state. Because that is ultimately the frustration, is when you see the politics rise. And I think that's pretty much why we're all so much happier to see the elections over with. You're tired of getting the daily calls, being inundated with voice messages and emails and campaign this and that. It's ridiculous. And so I'm hoping that now when we come back to session January 9th, that we can push all that aside and just see each other eye to eye, work together for the greater good, and try to decide really what's best for everyone, and not just trying to retain our seats politically, but simply be able to be proud of ourselves and come home with something good and honest, and not try to undercut the people. So I've been working with our leadership. Some of the conversations we've had, just what will be coming up, we're going to be meeting with the governor here next week. Some of the issues that I've brought up were, what are some projections he has in mind, and if we're going to continue looking at, for example, educational perspectives on, are we going to do maybe another take on our tuition freeze, and will we lock tuition for students who maybe make a commitment to graduate within 4 years? We've been pushing this for the past few years now since I've been in, and I'm hoping to see something similar to come out of this session. The other issue that I have is the career ladder. So we have a 5-year commitment to infrastructural investment there, and I'm hoping to continue just simply raising the funds necessary to ensure that our teachers have their needs met. The other issue I have is what I'm seeing, which is frustrating, is what the leadership has mentioned is basically cutting taxes. And I'd be all for cutting taxes, to be honest with you. I would love to see taxes cut, but the issue is you cut taxes, you can't pay your bills. So we still have needs with our infrastructure, roads and bridges. We have needs with our education, and of course the career ladder to keep in mind. So to be honest, if we have to be the adults in the room, I will be the adult in the room. And I will say we cannot cut taxes right now, but what we're looking at are income taxes. They want to cut the income tax from 7.4% to 7.1%, which is a cut for the rich in the state, and unfortunately does not help middle-class families or low-income families in the state. So I've also heard that one of my committee men will bring up the same Sharia law issue. We fought that in state affairs. I killed it because I said, honestly, I've been part of the conversations. Here we have over 1,300 farms in our district that would be impacted by this particular bill, because what it will do is impact both American court systems, striking out certain laws that also impact our negotiations with certain countries like Taiwan, for instance, and it impacts our business overseas. So for now, we'll see where that goes. I'm just concerned because we have a lot of international relations business-wise for our ag that this will tremendously impact. And I think it's just because it's such a social issue for some in the North that they think Sharia law is going to take over our world, our country. But we have to be wiser. So I'm hoping Representative Troy will stand with me on this issue. To me, we got to really be above, again, the politics and not allow religion to infiltrate our worldview. But that's one I'm really concerned about. The other issue I see, you know, we've been talking about a lot of social issues coming up this session, and people don't really, I don't know if it really makes it back here as often, but when we're down in the Capitol, we're so heavily inundated with everything that we're kind of sucked into, not just our committees, but, you know, just kind of trying to keep up with speed reading on every bill and ensuring we're voting the right way and that we're voting with our conscience and voting honest to God for the people. So it's a lot of work, but it can be frustrating at times because you also want to be involved in those conversations, debating on all the right issues. So we'll do our best to stay on top. We have less in our committee, which means I'll be on more. So they've appointed me to a lot of the issues that I've been involved with nationally, is criminal justice reform, working both on nonprofit developments and directly with the president at the White House on these developments. In fact, that's what I was supposed to be there for today. But we're doing this, and I really want to make sure that everyone's in the loop on what's going on. So criminal justice reform, we've been doing really great there. Our state director, Kevin Kempf, has resigned as of Monday, so he's moving on to a national association, which is great because he's a great guy, so he'll still be able to impact Idaho and other prison systems, but we have an opening. In the meantime, I'm hoping we'll get someone just as progressive as he was, because he was directly dealing with mental health issues and trying to reduce recidivism rates and help our people come home to be able to be just as productive back in the home community. So he was doing great. He was able to cut costs. We were seeing less burden on our budget, but that's part of my concern, is just trying to be more productive towards the long term and ensure people can come home and that we're helping our folks so that they're not just ending up in the system. I've been meeting with some of our attorneys in the state, and I've been taking a hard look at decriminalizing marijuana for that reason. And we'll see where that goes. I haven't heard any negativity. A lot of people have been very positive about it. We'll see, again, because it's marijuana. I said, honestly, I just want to lessen the burden, because a lot of our folks that are in the prison system that end up there end up going on to higher security systems. And we're just keeping them within the system the way it works in our state. So you cannot get off on good measure. You're stuck. And the way they're mandated prison sentencing, so there are no shortened sentences based on good behavior, which is frustrating because that's also an undue extra cost on the taxpayer. So you'll see some more reforms coming out for me, but I'm working directly with the Criminal Justice Reinvestment Oversight Committee, which is ongoing. So I'm also now a member of that. and then trying to cut costs. So again, just trying to ensure that we have more money for education. The other thing is I'm now on the Economic Outlook Committee, which is a joint legislative committee with the Senate and the House. And that will be on the 5th of January. So I'll be there from January 5th through the 9th, just looking at our economic outlook and revenue and seeing where we'll be going and how we can best impact our state budget. Aside from that, we're still on the Legislative Council. That's mostly internal matters. And we'll still be involved with energy-related issues. So I am also still appointed on a few other groups nationally and locally. My big issue, and it's no surprise here, is simply environmental justice and trying to better our state. We have a very beautiful state, and I hate to see it being sold off and privatized. On top of that, most of us here in Moscow, which I'm very proud of, are highly concerned with our water issues. So I will maintain that voice and to protect our water. But that sustainability comes with the collection of our voices, because I'm going to be one of a few. We have seen people, as of last session, promoting the privatization of lands for private gas drilling, fracking, and so we're going to see more of that. And my frustration is simply just the attack on private property rights. So, you know, we'll see what happens. It's kind of a mixed bag. I think a lot of these bills will come through state affairs, so I'll at least get first light and be able to debate on these issues in committee. And I guess we'll just kind of see what happens, because it's everyone's guess as to who will bring up what. I think some of the previous representatives will bring up the lands bill, so I'll have an opportunity to talk with them. We've become pretty good friends, so it's nice to at least talk to each other on a personal level and have healthy conversations. But as a matter of trying to switch them or sway them to not bring their bills up is another. My own bills I'll be bringing up. One that I have a high concern towards is the same one that I brought up last session, which is simply to take a hard look at all the tax exemptions that we offer all the big businesses in our state. And so that would be taking a hard look at our sunshine laws, but sunsetting those exemptions and then creating this committee that will have an oversight of those exemptions, so that we're cleaning out everything and just starting over afresh. Because I'm frustrated by the fact that we're nearing $2 billion in tax exemptions, which again is taking away from education. So when you hear that we have no money for education, that's why. So when you see further tax cuts, again, I'm just going to say, honestly, I'm going to be the adult. I'm hoping there'll be others there with me just to say that, yes, we would all love to cut taxes, but we have to pay our bills first. We have to be responsible to the people. There's also some rumor that the Blaine Amendment issue is going to come up. So I'm not on the Education Committee. They didn't allow us another seat. In fact, they were going to take another seat, because when we lost three Democrats on the caucus, we lost seats on various committees. So we had to fight to keep the few seats that we could. And we fought to keep the one on JFAC. We fought to keep the one on Education, and primarily because our party is wholly invested in education. So we said, well, if anything, just you can take us off any other committee, but not education. So we did retain our seats on education, and I'm proud of that and thankful, but they also added more Republicans to that, so it just makes the conversation kind of null and void when you're just the vast minority. So what we've been told is that, honestly, while we aren't needed because we don't have the votes this time around, what is going to happen is that we just have to be smart and wise about how we interact with people. For me, it's going to be the same thing. I'm still going to be direct, still honest, still going to be hoping that people will be open to that level of honesty. I think that we have to continue to employ the value system. And people say, well, you're a Democrat, you're going to go down there, you're in the super minority, what can you do? And people lose hope, they lose faith, they think, oh, you're, you know, why just not appoint another Republican? Well, I'll tell you why. It's because our values are wholly very strong, and what I stand for supersedes all politics. So I can suppress what I can, but all I can do is simply just tout that horn, be as loud as a voice as possible, and ensure that our value system is protected. So whether they vote or not against the bills that we want, doesn't matter, because we have a value system. That's what I'll continue to promote and just try to do as much as I can to rally that support. And again, I keep pointing to Representative Troy because I'm going to be counting on her wholly to simply carry the same message that I'm carrying from this district. There's all kinds of issues, I think, that are happening in play. There's a lot of conversation going on right now. No one has really settled on anything. For me, it's just trying to move forward on what we have going. We have a few bills circulating amongst our caucus. We have a few that we know about from the Republican caucus. Some that can be supported, some not so much. But for me, it's just keeping in mind all the responsibilities we have. I think of just simply the funding, trying to come up with that, being responsible there, not letting that service out, and ensuring that our schools are fully funded this time around, because we're not doing that. We're not upholding our constitutional responsibilities to the people, and that should be our highest priority. So with that, I'll cut myself short, and I think I have my time, but I really am looking forward to working with people. Just so you know, I have been approached by a lot of folks in this district. I've been meeting with everybody from our forestry groups to, Representative Troy has been there, and our tax group. Everyone has something that they want to bring up, so I've been approached by a few folks out of U of I and a few folks from here in the district that just want to have some bills. And I said, well, we'll work on them. We can draft something up, and we'll see what we can do. And it really, after being in office for 2 years, you have a good idea of who's willing to do what. So building those relationships outside of the Capitol is good, because you get to understand people personally and just try to figure out where they can be engaged and where not. So everyone has their particular issues. So that's kind of what's nice about it. I think I can try to align some people to these bills. But again, we'll see. It's a different game.
That was Idaho State Representative Paulette Jordan of Plummer, a Democrat, speaking at the Moscow League of Women Voters legislative preview session on December 7th. Last week, we brought you audio from Republican Idaho State Representative Carolyn Troy of Genesee. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather, patchy freezing fog after 4 a.m., mostly cloudy, low 6 below zero, wind chill values as low as 16 below zero, patchy freezing fog before 10 a.m. tomorrow, mostly cloudy and cold, high near 8, wind chill values as low as 16 below zero, southeast winds 6 miles an hour. Increasing clouds Saturday night with a temperature rising to around 9 by 5 a.m. Wind chill values as low as 5 below zero. 50% chance of snow Sunday, cloudy, high 24. New snow accumulation around an inch possible. And another inch of snow possible Sunday night, 40% chance of snow, cloudy, low 23. 70% chance of snow on Monday. Cloudy, high 34, 1 to 2 inches of accumulation possible. Remember, if you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscast you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $30 a year, $35 a year rather, $20 for low income and students. Remember, all editions of the KRFP Evening Report are archived on the KRFP website shortly after broadcast. I'm Lee Robartis, Scott Jackson, assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. Have a great weekend. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman Community Radio for the Palouse at 90.3 on your FM dial and online.